Hi, you are listening to the Defender Wellbeing Collective podcast, a space where you will learn about our shared journey, how the collective started, what we have learned along the way, and the important issue we explore together. I'm your host, Nanda, a feminist activist, storyteller, and the founder of Purple Feminist Crew from Myanmar. Welcome to our space, and thank you for listening. Welcome, Anjali and Yara. Thank you for being here on this first episode of Defenders Wellbeing podcast. First, let's go with Anjali. Can you start off by introducing yourself, who you are, what you do, and general anything about you that you want the audience to know?
Thanks, Nanda, for having me. I'm Anjali. I'm a human rights lawyer and have been working on initiatives around well-being and care within activist spaces.
How about Yara? Would you like to introduce yourself and what you do?
Thank you, Nandor. Thank you for leading this podcast with us. It means a lot that you are part of the Defenders Wellbeing Collective and also retelling the stories that we weave together for 2 years. My name is Yara. I'm an Egyptian feminist activist, researcher, and lawyer. And I'm working at the Human Rights Resilience Project, leading the peer-to-peer support program.
Thank you both for your lovely introduction. As we'll be using the word Defender Wellbeing Collective throughout the podcast, 5 or 6 episodes, we will be using the shortcut so that it's easier to for the conversation flow as well. So from now on, we'll be using the word DWC in each of the episodes as well. So when we are talking about DWC, people need to know, Anjali, let's start with you. What was the initial vision or inspiration behind starting Defender Wellbeing Collective? Why was it important for HRRP to invest something in something like this, especially in time like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were really three things that were underpinning the motivation to create a space or a collective where defenders could come together. I think first, and this is maybe broader to the work of the Human Rights Resilience Project, we had a sense that the work of being a human rights activist, of advancing and pushing for the rights of yourself or others, is really hard. And across the field, we need to care for ourselves while doing the work. And that's actually crucial to both the effectiveness of the field, but also long-term sustainability and duration of the field. And so the first motivation was we really wanted to learn more about what does care look like. Second, we also had a sense from prior research and interviewing and talking to others that there are tremendous initiatives and leadership within the human rights field around well-being and care, but that these are coming from the grassroots spaces. It's not the large organizations that are driving change around well-being and care. It's feminist organizations, it's young people, it's those who are most impacted by human rights violations in different contexts around the world engaging in collective care because they need to be able to do it in order to sustain and exist as an organization and as individuals. And so we wanted to be able to capture the voices and the perspectives of those who are already doing the work, who are already leaders in the field. And finally, I think we thought that, you know, bringing people who are already doing this work in different spaces together to learn from each other, to exchange with each other, we would create something that was bigger than the individual kind of the individual persons working on initiatives. And so we had the sense that the whole was better than the sum of it, you know, than the kind of individual constituent parts. And so we wanted to have a space where defenders could share ideas, share struggles, think together, be creative, and kind of imagine a different human rights field.
I think that's really meaningful. When you were explaining about care as a system, is that what I was thinking and remembering in my heart is the people from my village, you know, they might not be an organization, but it is a very communal space. People care about each other in the deepest level possible. Sometimes they just also invade your privacy. You know, if you are sick, the whole village knows and they bring soup, juice, herbal and all these kind of thing. And I think it has been practiced for a long time in our community, but I think it has not been said, especially in the activist community, because we think that our well-being could not be prioritized because we are here for others, but we cannot help others if we don't have sufficient help ourselves. So that's really beautiful. And that was also the reason that I joined the DWC, because I think I really thought I was really alone in that journey of being really unwell mentally in this activist arena. So let's go to Yara. In your experience, let's talk about what does it mean to hold spaces for others in ways that are deeply rooted in care and mutual. Even the way you carry yourself has that accent to it. And I have told you this. How did this show up during the DWC journey, in your opinion, as a facilitator?
Thank you, Nandor. I think the first thing like that I felt I needed to do is just to connect with being an activist myself. Like, why am I here in this space? How would I feel? Like, what do I want to get out of it? Because it's also like a personal interest that I want to learn from you and from other activists in our group. So for me, I think it was about just showing up to the space as myself, not just as like there's an agenda that we need to finish. There are points that like a preset outcomes that we need to bring into the space. So we had like a couple of ideas that we discussed as a team at the beginning, and we wanted to just unpack and to give space for participants to get to know each other and bring into the table what they want to discuss. So like just the basics of what well-being means to you, what cares mean to you, how does it reflect in your language, and how does it reflect also in your culture? Because like we were such a diverse group from, I think we're 18 countries from the Global South, 24 participants. And then after the first couple of online meetings, we started opening up the question about like, how do you want the space to be, how do you want to shape it, what can we do to support that? And then it started building up. So just coming to the space, knowing that you can just have like the first or second or third step, but then people who are weaving in the conversations and the interests, we weave it together. So I think although there was like the administrative burden was on us as a team, but I think it was a pretty much mutual space in terms of lack of hierarchy when it comes to the agenda setting and the conversations. Also, one thing that like I learned just by being a participant in other spaces that didn't really serve me is that just not to allow for space of silence and be comfortable with people showing up however they feel, like when people are not feeling well, people don't want to talk, when people don't show up, but they still want to know what happened for any type of reason, that this is also accepted, and accepted in a good way, not in a passive aggressive way of like, how didn't you show up? And so for me, I showed up in the way I felt I needed as a participant in different spaces. And I think the space gave me so much more than I expected. And for me, it was like even the highlight of it was in Nepal, for example. I think that was one of the best thing that happened to me last year, actually, is just being together in person and feeling like that we drafted the agenda together. We came here to learn from one another. There were spaces for each one of us to share our skills, our knowledge, the different backgrounds. And I think that was very important for me. And it gave me some grounding in a time where I don't have that type of community in Egypt, for example. So that was very important to me.
Thank you so much for sharing that in personal ways as well. And, as you said earlier, DWC for me, because of the way you guys put the effort into it, for me is one of the best space I've ever been in my entire life. I can say that because, as you set an example earlier, when we were in Nepal, some of us were sick because of the weather, the food, and then even though we wanted to show up, we didn't want to be disrespectful by sleeping around and something like that. But DWC opened the space up by saying that people can rest and sit and stand however they feel most comfortable to sit with, and not just in Nepal in person, but also when we were digitally communicating each other. I was feeling like it was one of the best and adaptive places and participant, let's just call ourselves as participant centric approach ever that I've ever seen, that we would show up and just bring our concern, bring our definition of, and bring up all the lived experience of our lives as activists from different part of the world. But then at the end of the day, we would truly found some foundational connection that brings us together and makes us feel less lonely. And I felt like through this DWC, we were not just having conversation about well-being, we were also building solidarity just by having that conversation around well-being, you know. So let's go to Anjali about the facilitation guideline. Can you walk us through that? What kind of thoughts and process went into that guideline? You know, how did you think that care and responsibility while supporting activists who are often holding so much themselves, as I said before?
Yeah, I mean, I think you had we knew we had something really special once we had seen all of the applicants. You know, we had 400 applicants. I was expecting like 15 or 16. And so we immediately knew we had something special. And we immediately knew we had people who, like you said, were holding so much on behalf of their communities and themselves. But also who were clear leaders in the field and who had been thinking about questions of well-being and care long before we came along. And so I think we were really concerned about three things. First is just having a lot of humility and understanding that the needs of people are going to be really complicated and we're not going to really know until we're halfway through. So we're going to have to figure it out as we go along. And so we really basically we said there's going to be two things that we're going to have that are non-negotiable, and everything else is going to be a community-led space. Everything else is going to be designed and run by the participants, and that's what's going to make it really strong. Is largely we're going to stay out of the way, and we're going to give it over to the participants to share what they know, to work on challenging issues jointly, and if there's disagreement within the group, that's a good thing. And I think we wanted to surface that. The two things that we had as kind of non-negotiables were first physical and digital security. We wanted to make sure that everybody felt that it was a safe space for them to come to virtually or physically. And that required a lot of, you know, tech support, back-end checking to make sure that we were having systems that were catering to the person who felt the most unsafe, not the person who felt the least unsafe. It meant that we weren't using, not using things like Google Docs or some of the things that might be easier to use and might be more efficient. We were not using platforms that would be really intuitive for people, but we had to pick things that were more secure so that everybody felt that they could actually be safe when they were in that space. And in person, it meant that we had to really think about where we would meet as a collective, and how we would navigate that. And then the second thing we wanted to make sure is that if somebody was going through a mental health crisis or things were really quite extreme, we had the resources and support to be able to actually help them on a one-on-one basis. You know, I think we felt that it wasn't fair if somebody was going through a crisis for the whole group to have to take that on. You know, the idea was not to make this more work or more burden or care for the group, but to make it a lighter space, and to make it a space where you could actually enter, talk to people, and leave feeling a little bit lighter than you were when you came in. And so we had a holistic security team, and we had a psychologist on call that people could reach out to if they wanted to. But I think outside of the kind of physical, digital, and then kind of emotional well-being, we largely wanted to stay out of the way because we knew that the ideas that people were bringing is what would shape the group and is what would make it a kind of imaginative space.
Right, we did feel that very much so. So thank you for putting that effort to.
And I think we wanted to have fun, Nanda, right?
Yeah,
Like, I think part of it
exactly.
was about having a space where, yeah, we talk about really difficult things and we engage with well-being, but we also have a really good time and we get to know each other and we build trust amongst each other.
Yes, exactly. We connected. One of the DWC participant truly became my best friend, you know. So I think that signify something really meaningful in the work that DWC has been doing, you guys are doing. And another thing I really love about DWC is, like, you know, I can honestly say that both Anjali and Yara, you are not just doing this as a as a job. You know, you are doing it as a personal agenda as well. The way you both carry yourself brings such a grace about care, about community, you know. And that's what I love most about you both as well when I meet you both outside in Nepal. And I was like, these people are not just doing it for the sake of job or for the for show kind of thing, you know. They're doing it because they really care. Even the way you guys talk about it, it's always community-centric, people-centric approach. And I think that's really rare. And I hope there are more people that will lean towards doing that kind of approach because it's really beneficial and it's really effective, you know. So, Yara, tell us the way the sections were designed. Because I, as I said before earlier as well, it was very intentional. It felt like it was really engaging as well. Can you share like how you approached planning them, like from structure to the energy and what you were hoping the participant would walk away with? You know, I have some feedback already during the podcast, but I would love to hear your expectation around it as well.
It was a group, like it was a teamwork actually. It was me, Anjali, and Mela, who would like decide beforehand what do we want to work on. And as I mentioned before, there were like a couple of things that we thought that it would be good to start with, like definitions of care and well-being within our culture, within our languages, coming from the whole globe, of the global majority. And then we thought that it would be good to start asking the participants of the collective itself to just define this. And I think there's a lot of things that matched with our own personal interest as well, as a team. So a lot of the things related to, for example, financial safety, a lot of issues related to isolation and loneliness, because each one of us in our different communities come with like this burden of wanting to talk about care and well-being and resilience, and then people are telling them this is not the right time. And this is th that was very interesting, because I always thought that, like, because I'm involved in Egypt, that's only me. But then the space was so great in just letting us all of us know that this is a very common feeling, this feeling of isolation, about like we need to talk about resilience, we need to talk about how we can continue in our activism with hope, with joy. How we can accept ourselves when we need to withdraw and get some rest, how we can work with judgments of others about our own choices in work, our own choices in personal life. So I think that was the structure. Like it was a teamwork, and also not just the Human Rights Resilience Project team, but a teamwork with everyone who was participating at the Defenders Wellbeing Collective. The energy, I think I learned a lot from everyone in this space, actually. Like I learned to accept, like before starting the DWC, I think I was pretty much nervous around silence and like, oh, maybe, because also everyone had different internet bandwidth. So not everyone opened the camera. So I was very nervous and I had to open the camera for myself. And I didn't know if I'm doing a bad job or not. And then by time, I just relaxed into the fact that each one of us, like some people took the calls from a cafe and some people took it from the airport, and some others, like they were lying down in a different, completely different time zone, because we had to also organize within like all of these time zones in two different circles. So Mela was facilitating one circle and I was facilitating another. And Anjali was just attending both.
I was like
And
doing 5 a.m., listening to your voice at 5 in the morning. It was very soothing.
I thought that was crazy to be able to bring all these people from different time zones in one place on one time. It's like, good job, you guys.
It wasn't easy, to be honest, and I learned a lot. I learned to accept that people come with different energies and people come with different abilities to show up physically in a video, or sense of security. Like, for example, at the beginning, people were not quite sure because we didn't know each other. Like, we didn't even s see each other's faces. Who would have known that we would be able to show up in a time when we're vulnerable, for example. So I think the energy, it wasn't just us. It was everyone taking part in the collective's online meetings or the in-person meeting in Nepal. And I think I learned more than anything else. I learned just to come to this space with like however I feel and accept whoever is coming in with the vulnerability of the day, with the feelings of the day, with excitements or ideas or just silence.
What you have just said about silence resonate me as well. Like, I'm someone who's also struggling very much. I mean, struggled, I think past 10 would be more ideal to stay in silent. Like, I'm really uncomfortable with silence. But gradually, DWC education, let's just put it that way, and experience that I've learned that it's okay. It's okay to be silent. Sometimes silence is rest as well. For some people, even in if they are in the group setting, they might not want to say anything, but they just want to be there, exist there. Because that's what I felt like. I was really sick, but I didn't want to go to my room because of the space that DWC was holding for us. That it's okay, like you can go. And I think that feeling of what is the word? I can't really describe it in English, where you feel very home and very non-judged. That you don't want to leave because you feel so welcome. Okay, welcome by that space. So you just want to be there, even though you can't open your eyes, you just want to use your ear, listening to whatever everyone is saying and experience through your ears. So that was really
I mean,
beautiful.
I think one of the best ideas that Yara had when we met in prison is to just like have a mattress in the joint room so that whoever wanted to kind of just take a sleep and listen and rest, but be part of the space could do that. And I had never thought about that. You know, I come from a very lawyer space where we have a boardroom and meetings and, you know, this kind of thing. And I think the space was just the physical space was full of art and color and people were turning it into their own space, and you could rest. And somebody had essential oils, and another person had music. And I think there was something about the space that wasn't a, that had nothing to do with what we were saying, but the kind of both the energy and the presence that we were bringing that made it just really special for me.
I agree. And I was thinking the word to describe that space in Nepal, the physical one, just to help people visualize it. It was the word is intersectional. I think it felt that way. Like everyone, regardless of their energy level, they were feeling welcome, you know? At least I can say that for because of the conversation that I've had with the people in the podcast. So thank you for creating that space and letting us experience that with you together, you know, and with other activists as well. So, as a final question, I want to ask you both that if you can describe or if you want to describe DWC experiences or the journey of DWC or DWC itself in a single sentence or feeling or a quote or something larger than a sort of like a metaphor, even, this would be a really good time.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to think of one word, but I'm not that succinct. And so maybe I'll have th three words. I think one that I'll borrow from Yara. I think the three words, and and they go together, are imagination, vulnerability, and joy. I think we were able to hold all three emotions and all three ideas at the same time. We could be a space where we could be really vulnerable, but also a space where we could dream, and a space where we could have fun. And there was something really magical about, you know, that combination. And I'm just really glad that I was able to be part of it. And I'm really hopeful that we can have more spaces like that in the human rights field going forward.
Thank you, Yara.
No, I feel very weird to be borrowing something like bell hooks said, like after you said your words from Yara. I was like, okay, I'm not that important.
You're that important. Let me tell you, you are that
Yeah,
important to me.
exactly.
Yeah, like DWC reminds me of a very beautiful quote by bell hooks. Rarely, if ever, are any of us healed in isolation. Healing is an act of communion. And I feel like this. It's just like anything and everything about DWC, right? It's for me, that's when I think about the DWC, I think about this quote of bell hooks. But Anjali just like
I
put me
think
on
of
the spot.
Yara and Nando. Yeah, I think of DWC.
That's so beautiful. And I just want to also, as a last section or last part of this conversation, before we close it, I want to let everyone who's listening to know that, as Yara earlier said as well, we will be having upcoming episodes on isolation, languages of care, and how people survive or manage or resist in the conflict with care, you know. And we'll also be talking about financial well-being for activists, because we are all very poor apparently, so we need to do something about it.
Speak for
So
yourself, Nando. I am rich in love.
out. Generally speaking, I'm not saying everyone, but I feel like most of us are very broke. So
True.
thank you, Yara and Anjali, for being a part of this very first episode of Defend the Wellbeing Collective podcast. It has been a pleasure speaking with you two and understanding and walking through the journey of bringing this DWC out of to the world and to us. Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank you.
Nanda, for having us.
Thank you for joining us on the Defenders Wellbeing Collective podcast, as we shared with you bits and pieces of our solidarity journey. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please share it with your fellow activists. This space reminds us that even in resistance, we deserve rest. Until next time, take care of yourself and one another.